everybody, and welcome to this month's episode of our Money Dashboard podcast. My name is Lisa, and I'll be your host today. We also have a few members of our development team in the room. We have Richard Brown. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
And Adam.
Hi. Hello.
And we have Adrian. How are you doing?
Hi, good.
Good. And we also have some last minute additions to the group from our data insights team. Got Max. Hi, Max.
Hello.
And we've got Chris.
Hello.
Cool. So this podcast is going to be a little bit different and probably more fun than the last couple we've done. So all based on the Lean Coffee Morning. Richard, do you want to just explain just really quickly what that means?
Yes. So Lean Coffee is a structured agenda-less meeting where we will work through a backlog of agenda items which we've discussed and agreed democratically. And we'll go through them in order, limit the amount of time we'll have on each one and just have some interesting discussion. We'll probably talk for 3 minutes, and if we're really enjoying it, we'll extend that by two. And I'm hoping there will be some form of buzzer to indicate our time.
Yes, so that's where it gets fun. I am going to kind of mediate this, and I'm going to set off an alarm bell to go off every 3 minutes for these discussions. So when you hear a strange sound, that's the end of that discussion. But then we get to vote, so you might hear some yay or nays, and depending on how the numbers do on that, we'll talk about the topic for a bit longer or move straight on to the next one. So is everybody ready?
Absolutely.
Good. Okay, first topic. Money Dashboard, are you agile? Let's start with Adam. Is Money Dashboard agile, Adam?
I think that sub-teams, some of them are more or less agile. I can speak for the development team that we try to implement some of the agile principles, but I don't think that we are fully agile. There's still some bits missing, but we're trying to accommodate what suits us best.
I think that's absolutely right. I think certainly from the software development arena, we've been trying to put some agile bits in.
There are.
Agile is something I think that could potentially be rolled out across the whole company, and I echo what Adam says. I think we've got some good agile practices. Scrum and Kanban we use, depending on the nature of the work in the development team, but there are other elements, perhaps in Money Dashboard, that are still quite waterfall. I don't want to say it's a journey, but it is a journey, and it's kind of something that I think I'm certainly passionate about at the moment, of trying to try and get us more agile. And I don't know how it works in other parts of the business.
So I think it's quite challenging when you look at data to take the same sort of approach as you can perhaps in web or development arenas. But we certainly look at an evolutionary process within the data business. The big design up front area and way of doing things just doesn't really hold. So we work and develop out the data products in sort of 1-2 week stretches, but we're still pretty informal, and we've got quite a way to go in terms of maturing the way we do things. So I think we'll need to see how development teams learn.
Do we want to keep talking about this for another 2 minutes?
Yes.
Yay.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Max was in full flow.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think Max, a lot of the stuff we do is very much incremental development, I suppose, more, not necessarily all the agile principles, but we definitely do incremental, maybe not iterative, but incremental sprints or iterations, I guess that. So we try and work 1 week, 2 weeks, and have a deliverable at the end of that. I heard a phrase recently, minimally viable agile. I think maybe that is one of the key things, that you're breaking stuff down into 1 week, 2 weeks, and trying to work that time box. I think that's probably where we're strongest at the moment.
Do you agree, Adrian?
Yeah, especially for the development team, I agree with this. It's interesting to see how agile practices working in other teams, because usually when you hear agile, you think of software development, and you think for something that's designed just for software development, but it's just really generic good practices, and it's interesting to see if it works in other departments, or if it's probably not well designed for this kind of work.
I think it is anything that's production based. So you had a friend, Mark Ridley, in the other day to talk to us about Agile, and he certainly made the point that I could be firing out blog posts a lot faster than I was, because I tend to get quite pernickety about them and hold on to them too long, and then suddenly the trend is gone.
So
I think that could translate across the departments.
Yeah, certainly they have a kind of a head of agile practice which spans the business, so absolutely.
Is that the buzzer?
There was meant to.
I think I heard the buzzer. Oh.
Sorry, late one on that. Okay, so do you think we came up with some good points for that?
Yeah, good discussion. Yeah.
Something to take away?
Yeah.
So the next topic is IaaS development. That ain't hard, right, Adrian?
Definitely don't agree with the title. So it's a very strange experience developing our brand new native IaaS app, because everybody was expecting that when you develop a native app, everything should be much easier. You have a much sleeker platform, a very mature one. But I don't think that our expectations were met with IaaS. And I think that's due to the fact that IaaS is, as they say, they think different.
Yeah.
So it's the whole platform is like nothing else you've been working with. And there is a very steep learning curve, which was definitely an issue for us. But sitting at the final product would at least be as good as Android, which I guess says something.
Yeah. Do you think the language that you're developing in and the libraries matter? I think Swift is just charging up the programming languages and is about to enter the top 20 and
wow,
things like that. So do you think that made it harder?
Initially we were thinking that would be the hardest thing, learning a new language. But Swift is actually a pretty nice language to learn. It's easy to learn it. I wouldn't say that the language itself was an issue. It was more of how the whole platform is built. Apple's idea of building software is definitely different from anything else. They're following their own practices and sometimes not the best ones.
We've got quite a stable and good platform sort of development kit here, but for iOS it was all thrown up in the air. Dedicated Apple equipment for a start, and Apple, they made you jump through a few hoops to make it fit into your development life cycle, it's fair to say, and that's been one of the big challenges for us, trying to get that. The challenges of developing mobile apps as opposed to a web application are different. We kind of got our heads around that from doing Android, but iOS was another level just because of the toolkit that you need. Swift, yeah, I've even dabbled in a bit of Swift, but Xcode has its own behaviours, shall we say, that are a little bit tricky to get your head around sometimes.
I'd say that Swift was the only thing that made the whole experience pleasurable. I don't know, if we have to use Objective-C, I think it was just going to be a nightmare.
I mean, and it looks great. It looks great. Once you kind of see it on a device, stress goes away, kind of. Maybe. Adam showed his head there. That's not normal.
Adam's got a twitch in the corner and he's just...
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. That's two down, three to go.
Okay.
Do we need a water break? Are we all okay?
Awesome. All good.
Good, suitably watered. Okay. On that note, I think this one should go to you, Chris, actually. Lots of users must mean lots of data. Is that big data?
It's kind of like one of those... I saw a great slide at one point that says big data is like... It's like talking about sex when you're a teenager. Nobody knows what it is. Everyone else thinks that everyone else is doing it.
I was really hoping you would
go with that. Well, you know, in terms of, is high volumes of data? Absolutely. I think what people tend to mean by big data is really, really awesome... in-depth analysis by using lots of data points. Generally, perhaps the philosophy there is more is better. I don't think so. I think the right type of data is better, and having the right kind of tools to do that on top. So, you know, we've got some pretty kick-ass reporting tools that we can use. We can get into the data quite quickly and come up with some really cool analysis. So, volume of users is always helpful, but I think it's really Ian and the insights team kind of says is asking the right questions. That's the important bit. You can have all the data you want in the world, but if you don't have the right questions to ask, then you're not going to get any use out of the data. So,
do you think it's the richness of the data rather than the volume? Is there a difference there? You know, do you know what I mean by richness?
Yeah, that's why I think it's hard to define, because it's different things to different people. Is it NoSQL? Is it SQL? Is it relational databases? Is it, you know, document key value pair stores? And is it large volumes of data, or is it too much data?
Yeah.
Another one is whether it's streaming data, so are you trying to handle sort of really high volume, very fast arrival of data, and you're trying to deal with it at the speed that it comes at? It's difficult to nail down, it's difficult to pin down, and we're definitely growing. We grow, our data grows significantly, and we're handling it at the moment, but it throws up all sorts of challenges in terms of scalability, and there are many different big data approaches to handling the problems that can come up with that. I think we will see ever more challenges in Money Dashboard with that.
Two more to go. We've got critical non-essentials and why they matter.
Yes.
Okay. Let's start the clocks here for this one.
Critical non-essentials. Does everybody know what that is?
Please explain.
Okay. In 2003, England won the Rugby World Cup. Just thought I'd drop that in. great day, even my Scottish wife cheered when England won that, which is really, but I digress. But Clive Woodward was the coach of that side, and he coined this phrase, critical non-essentials, and it's about the differentiators between sort of, I don't know, good to great. It's the things that can make a difference. You know, the difference between winning and losing can be so sort of marginal, if you like, and it could be the difference just between somebody getting an extra half hour sleep in the cycling world or something like that. And I think you can apply that to software development and in fact any office environment maybe. So it could just be something as simple as having an optical mouse versus everybody having track pad mouses or smash pads, as I don't know how to use.
Or yes. Working internet as opposed to intermittent internet.
Yes. Well, no. you make a good point, and that's different, right? Because okay. I would say that's not a non-essential. That's an essential. If you kind of get into Maslow's hierarchy of needs in the company workplace, an internet connection for a business like ours is absolutely critical. So that is a critical essential,
okay.
Not a critical non-essential.
Good to have a...
Yeah, and that is the distinction.
So I guess you could split between the technical critical non-essentials and the kind of the more softer human aspects of working. So we're working at business with other human beings, right? So you've got to look at how... the culture is built so that people can work to the best. The common theory is that, you know, happy employees are more productive employees. And I guess it's all these little things as well on the softer side that really help, right?
Exactly.
See, so my interpretation of what you meant by that when I saw the note was things like promoting code through from development into production environments. And although it's not an essential part of the delivery, it is an essential part of how efficient you're putting things out or able to be agile to revisit earlier topics. And that's something that is critical to us, but non-essential in terms of tech delivery. Because if we didn't do it smoothly and rapidly and have the right kind of controls in place and pipeline to get it, we wouldn't get it done as quickly as we do.
We want to go on for a little bit longer on that one?
Yes, please.
Yeah. I'd like to get Adam's thoughts.
So I agree with Max. There's quite a few, for example, development practices that are necessary to actually deliver the software. However, they are very helpful for us to actually make sure that the software is of a good quality. So, for example, making sure that we've got a continuous integration in place. It's hard to say whether it's actually essential or non-essential, but that can be mentioned as critical, non-essential on the top of the list. You can deliver software without it, but having that in place, I think it makes it having a better software and making sure that the quality aspects are met as well.
Yes.
That's a good example of something that probably was a non-essential at the time, but was actually helped efficiency so much that it became a very essential part of the whole development life cycle.
I always think with these things, so the critical non-essential might be coding standards, naming conventions, things like that, which, okay, the user's not going to see anything of that. You know, it works the same whether you call something Bob or Chris, but when you come to work with it, you know, it just makes your code so much more readable, saves you time, and everybody, it does come into the soft side. Everyone enjoys working with it because people can understand it, and that's not spending half their time trying to work out why something's written there. So those kind of, and there are these all over software development, they're all over the workplace, as Chris touched on the softer side of it as well. And it's something I love that concept of kind of critical non-essentials. It can go off into, as I say, things like marginal gains or the orange extension cable, all sorts of things which exist in the workplace.
So you have just like
a minute to just talk about the orange extension cable as its own little metaphor, because I think we're all curious about that.
Everybody must have heard me talk about the orange extension cable. So very briefly then, there's this is not my thing, it's something I've become familiar with. Essentially, a guy turns up at his new job, first thing he notices is there's an orange extension cord in reception, and he says, why the hell is that there? That looks ridiculous. And people that have been there a while say, oh yeah, I can't remember. And he's like, that's terrible, that makes the place look bad, I'm going to make it my mission to get rid of that. Tries to make a difference, tries to get rid of it, can't, because he can't get to the right people, he's busy in his new job, and after a while just forgets about it, and, you know, suddenly he doesn't even notice it anymore because he's been there so long and he's moved on to other things, but that orange extension cable is there.
And then a new graduate comes in to do an internship and says, oh, I was just tripped over.
So you need to see them with fresh eyes and get rid of them to ensure an excellence.
And that's something we could speak about for hours, I think, as well.
I should. Thank goodness for the bell.
So we've got the last one. Who would like to lead this, the essential technical toolkit? I think we all have a little bit to say, bar me. Max?
To me, the toolkit is key. I'd like to ideally stay in one tool for all of my needs. And I guess the difficulty is that there's certainly within our space, there's quite a lot of tools, reporting tools, databases and editors and stuff, and I have to jump between them all. They all have slight nuances. It's frustrating. So to me, it's trying to minimise the number of tools I have to jump around.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So Visual Studio tries to be all things to all people, right? You know, would you want to do your, you know, if you're a developer, speak to Adrian Adam about this, you know, do you want to do all your C# development in that and also do all your SQL Server stuff in the same one? Or do you prefer dipping in between the two? Because surely SQL Server Management Studio is geared towards being excellent for that, and Visual Studio is geared for the other thing, and try to merge them and have it once, or I think maybe you lose something? I don't know.
This comes a future topic, is I would say, is GUIs versus command lines, and how...
Careful!
Would you? Yeah, indeed. But I would rather work in a command line where I get to know it and I know it's on every machine, it just functions, it just works and does its thing, rather than learning different GUIs and everyone comes up with their own.
Your essential toolkit is the command prompt.
That's it. I think it's very good before starting to use some kind of tool to first know how the tool works internally. I mean, to know the technology, know what the tool does. Because it's very tempting to just start using a tool and not care what's going on. But every tool has its limitations, and when you hit one of them, it's really hard to then go on your own. Very good example with source code, so for instance with GitHub, you've got a client which seems very useful, but when you get into an edge case and you have to use a command line, if you haven't done it before, it's just you can spend days just doing a simple task.
I thought GitHub too, actually, because the GitHub user interface as well, the GUI changes, so you think you knew how to revert something, and you come back the next day and it's, how does this GUI work? Whereas if you're Max and you're just firing away at the shell or whatever, you know, you're off and running.
Never used GUI, and the command lines never changed.
I have been caught up in the issue of trying to revert back in the GUI tool. There's reverting, and then there is just adding a detached head base. Correct what it is, and then you get into a world of mess unless you know what's going on. So yeah, the command line is way more flexible, but it's way more technical as well.
Lots of food for thought.
I think we've covered a huge breadth of topics between departments, which is what we're trying to really discover.
Can you make sure you get better coffee next time?
I will make sure.
You're so lean in our conversation. That's the only coffee.
Just so you know, the coffee element of this coffee session is missing. I did bring donuts, but
Adam has a coffee.
Adam has coffee.
I have an empty coffee cup.
You bought it. It's like a metaphor. But thank you so much, and I think that a lot of our Twitter followers, actually a huge majority of them, are in the development sector. We might actually develop like a data fangirling like group at some point. We'll definitely bring all these guys back in the room, and yeah, catch us next month for the next podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.